Welcome to our first meeting of the third term. I'm reminding you, honorable members, that today we have the Commission on Gender Equality before us, as well as welcome the Department of Higher Education and Training. Our meeting today, honorable members, are twofold. The one part arising out of the meetings, out of the Portfolio Committee's engagement with the Human Rights Commission, who briefed us on transformation of all the institutions in higher education and training. We felt the need to call the Gender Commission, the Commission on Gender Equality also, as one of the aspects that arose out of this, that briefing we got, related to the gender aspect of transformation at all of these institutions. And we felt it's important to bring them before us because we do think transformation without looking at gender equity, gender balance, and imbalance, etc., is not meaningful transformation. So that's the one part that they will be reporting to us. And of course, honorable members, the speaker has referred the report to us, and hence we asked him to come. The second part, honorable members, that we're asking them to speak about also relates to the aspect as it relates to the gender-based violence experience at various institutions, and then the work that the commission is doing in this regard also. So that's the twofold part. We will then invite the department to equally also do a briefing to us. Honourable members, tomorrow we will be dealing again with the department insofar as the quarterly report is concerned, as well as the aspect of the community education, the community colleges. And the next day, as we've agreed in the last meeting, that we will return the same institutions to us as it relates to the student funding. So on Thursday, we're having all of the same again. We'll have the students again, organization. We will have their bodies, as well as both on the university and the colleges, their bodies also, and the department, and both the management of NASFIS and the management and the board members also. So that's our program for the week, honorable members, that we're going to have till Thursday. I'm going to, if we are happy with the agenda, honorable members, we have quite a number of apologies. There are some members that are out of the country. There are two members that are sick. There are others that didn't tell us why they're not coming, and there are some that decided to tell us now that they... So on the basis of that, I want to ask that we proceed. We don't have a quorum, so we're not going to take any decisions in this meeting, but I feel on the basis of the powers given to me that we nevertheless proceed with the meeting, but we will not take any decisions at this meeting because there's no quorum. I'm going to, with your permission, honorable members, if you agree, that we proceed then to ask the Commission for Gender Equality to introduce themselves and then proceed with their presentation to us. May I see from the department side who Who is here from the department? Oh, there you are. Okay. We, after their input, we will go to you. We then will engage together. May I hand over to you, CEO?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Lula Amanare. I'm the chairperson of the Gender Commission. Accompanying me is our CEO. I will allow you to introduce. Thank you very much, Chair, for inviting the Gender Commission. We are very excited to appear in front of higher education just to speak on issues of gender transformation. I think one of the things that the Gender Commission exists for is to make sure that the status of women and the quality of life of women, the opportunities are equally given to women, the protections in the workplace for women, the promotions, the selections, the recruitment of women in the workplace, in the workspaces. With that in mind, we used our Act Section 187 of the Constitution and our Act 39 of 1996 that the CGE is required to promote respect, promotion, development, and attainment of gender equality. And our mandate is to monitor and evaluate legislation, policies, practices of the state, statutory bodies, and private business, as well as indigenous and customary laws and practices, research, and make recommendations to Parliament. Hence, I think that the chairperson also alluded to the fact that our report was tabled at this committee. We also wanted to raise the issue that it seems that at many times gender is the blind spot that all our leaders seem to act on just by default rather than intentional. I think the Gender Commission, after we received numerous complaints from our learners, our lecturers in universities complaining about gender discrimination at work, and our learners, the LGBTI learners, the committing of suicide in the higher education, rape in parts of the universities, and the lack of adequate response from our universities when we were inquiring, when we're doing the investigations, that what is it that you are doing, how did you act, and we then decided as the commission that let's use our legal powers to call higher education institutions. So far we have called about 14 of them, and we have a different mix. We will have your high-end universities, the ones that are top ranking in the country. And we also have our amalgamated universities, like TUT is one of the amalgamated universities. We called all of them, from UCT to TUT, UF. And there are findings that we wanted to present to yourselves. I must also state, Chair, that that our VCs were not very forthcoming to our investigation, so we had to subpoena everyone, because we wanted to get exactly the information that we needed. We also used the Employment Equity Act, especially on gender transformation issues, and we used that for our information as a primary a source of information, and then we engaged with the different universities. And that is what we wanted to share with the committee today. It's not that exciting news, but we are here to, the Chapter 9, because we do the monitoring, we're raising a red flag that our universities, led by the advanced detachment in the society, is really not doing justice to that advancement of society. And we are calling universities for them to really transform and to be part of what the country is, its outlook is, and to comply with the Constitution. So I'll give over to our CEO just to give us a synopsis of our findings in terms of the gender transformation, and then the second part will be on the gender-based violence. Thank you very much. thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon, honorable members. As the Chair has indicated, the Commission for Gender Equality has traveled a journey with institutions of higher learning. I might also add that we also at some point had to call and engage with a higher education department itself. We have called 14 institutions, as the Chair has indicated, and basically part of what we were looking into is to check transformation and obviously to look specifically on issues of gender-based violence, sexual harassment, and the like. And so the process that we undertake is to put questionnaires in place that we then request the institutions to complete and give us back. These questionnaires look at a myriad of issues, looking into transformation in terms of the numbers, the policies that are in place, and all that. And so we then get those back, and that's what we then analyze. And then after an extensive analysis, we then call these institutions to come and appear. The CGE was and has always been concerned with lack of proper understanding of gender dynamics in the workplace, also accompanied by a slow pace of gender transformation that we are seeing in the country. And this symptomatic, this mentioned, as I've just indicated, our concerns obviously are also of the fact that we are not necessarily as a country complying with the relevant labor legislation. We have international instruments that we are a signatory to, that we have obligations as a country, whether it's CEDAW and all the others, but as well we have our own national legislation that has been put in place in response to some of those obligations in the international instruments that we are signatory to. We've got Employment Equity Act, we've got Basic Conditions of Employment, we've got PEPUDA, Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, which we look into specifically when we undertake this particular work. And the CGE's decision, obviously, to place a special focus on institutions of higher learning was precipitated by some disturbing media reports as well as complaints that were reported to the Commission. As the Chair has said, in some instances we got complaints from employees, and in some instances we got complaints specifically from the students. Just to summarize some of the issues that were there, we were worried about the media reports that were highlighting sex for marks scandals, allegations of sexual harassment at institutions of higher learning, slow transformation around issues of our LGBTIQ, and the placement of women and persons with disabilities in senior echelons of management, and also adoption of relevant gender policies that will assist and ensure that transformation actually takes place. So when we did these hearings, the primary objective was to assess the impact of employment equity legislation and to hold institutions of higher learning accountable for non-compliance. And we wanted to also probe and look into their current internal policies, systems and programs, and relevant strategies that they may put or that they may have put in place to ensure that effectively transformation takes place, also including the challenges faced in achieving broader transformation goals in the country. Furthermore, the hearings, we use these hearings as a platform to bring to light the discrimination and risks that may be experienced by women, by people with disabilities and LGBTI persons across various sectors and levels within the workplace, but as well as the students themselves. As indicated, we called 13 universities, and the 14th that appeared was the department itself. So Cape Town, Free State, Johannesburg, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo University, Northwest, University of Pretoria, Rhodes, Stellenbosch, University of South Africa, Venda, WITS, Tshwane, and obviously TUT, and obviously the department itself made the number 14. And they appeared all before us. We are still in the process in the current year. There are specific ones that we are still going to be looking into, like your Mpumalanga, Zululand, and the like. As I indicated earlier, we serve questionnaires, and we then analyze the information that they send us. And out of that, then we then convene a specific hearing where we then interact and engage with the universities. The university is given a chance to appear before the commission and do oral presentation over and above the information that we would have received and analyzed. And after this particular presentation, then we then engage and ask questions. And then where we find problems, discrepancies, gaps, weaknesses, we do highlight even during the process. And we do then follow up. We put out a report that highlights, you know, some of the weaknesses or the gaps or issues that we have per institution, and we then write to them, and then we give them a bit of time, and then we do follow-ups just to check how far they are or how far they are progressing in terms of implementing or looking into the challenges that we would have highlighted as an institution. Overall, the findings across the universities, sexual harassment is prevalent at institutions of higher learning, and sexual harassment predominantly also comes in the form of sex for marks. Sexual harassment policies, when they are there, in some instances they are very weak, and where they are there, they are not even communicated to students or even general staff members. Policies are, in most instances, just placed on the intranet. The commission found that during orientation of first-year learners, most universities don't even induct learners on sexual harassment policies and all those other processes. Similarly, during induction of staff members, minimal time seems to be invested on those particular policies that we thought are of importance, looking at the scourge of gender-based violence that is happening within the institutions. We found that generally sexual harassment policies were focused on employees to the exclusion of learners. So where they had policies, you find that it does not say anything specifically about the student themselves. We also found that there was uncertainty around sexual policy framework at universities that has contributed to students and staff members not reporting to such members to such matters at university out of fear of victimization. In some instances, students report sexual harassment after a very long time. So normally,
policies are put in place to also give guidance in terms of procedure and processes that people must be able to follow when there is a particular incident that takes place. But because there hasn't been a particular clear framework that is assisting, you find a situation where we find people don't actually, when the matter or the incident happens, actually goes up immediately and reports and get the matter to be dealt with. Not all universities also provide counseling services of victims of sexual harassment, and the students often rely on Department of Social Development for these kinds of services. We found that some universities had introduced a helpline for people to report incidences of discrimination and violence, and specifically against LGBTIQ persons, but on an anonymous basis, whilst other universities had no measures put in place to eradicate gender-based violence among students, staff members, even suppliers. We also noted that consumption of alcohol and drugs by students seem to also contribute to a high number of sexual violence incidents that are taking place. We noted further that institutions of higher learning are failing to create an environment of zero tolerance to gender-based violence, to assess gender-based violence threats within their campuses, and to support victims or respond timely and appropriately to some of these matters. The universities have no specific policies that deal with safety of students and the processes that must then be followed if an incident happens. Students who reside outside university residences are more susceptible to gender-based violence, and universities often neglect to put some safety measures for them as they go off campus or go out of campus. The interventions, there are some certain interventions that we had to also take in place, taking into account the summary of those issues that I've just highlighted, which is what came out of our engagements with these universities. We then compelled universities to conduct sexual harassment campaigns during orientation. And we additionally delivered sexual harassment lectures to various universities where we also targeted students and some staff members when we were going through these workshops and some of the processes. We have recommended that sexual harassment and grievance policies be shared with student representative councils as well. SRC and management needs to create a safe reporting space for students. The CGE has attended induction processes at various universities to try and ensure, as a measure to try and ensure that some of these issues that we have highlighted, especially during induction that are not happening, possibly take place, that sexual harassment and grievance policies are adequately outlined and engaged at that point. We also recommended that refresher sessions on sexual harassment and grievance policies be conducted with staff members and students. Sexual harassment policies needed to be regularly reviewed and updated. Some of those that were there, we noted that were quite old, and so we also had then indicated that they need to ensure that they review their policies timely and regularly. We also recommended that universities must also try and build strong relationships with SAPS to address gender-based violence within and outside campus areas. Against these recommendations or some of these interventions that we have highlighted, some universities have invested in building more university residences to actually minimize number of students who reside outside of campus. Some universities have introduced CCTV footages on campus as part of their safety mechanism. Sexual harassment policies have been extended to protect even independent contractors who enter campus in some instances. Whistleblower lines have been established in some universities in order to be able to report on gender-based violence matters. And so we also wanted, as we are engaging, to just zoom in into, you know, some of the some specific universities, and we selected specifically Rhodes. We looked at Rhodes and the fact that it is the fact that there's been all these sexual violence that are taking place. Has been something that has always been a problem there. We within the study that were been made previously, it is claimed that over half the population and found a campus unsafe at night at Rhodes, and around 12% did not want to even walk alone at night. We took cognizance of student calls to eradicate the scourge of rape at the institution during the 2016 student protest, culminating into a multi-pronged investigation that took place. High delegation meetings with SRC Council, South African Police, and the Office of the Vice Chancellor, and some upper echelons of staff. And the some of the task teams, the meetings took place. On-site surprise inspections of campus and the harassment office, including random questioning of students as to their knowledge of sexual offences and the options available to report that was done. Rhodes University was included in the sampling for the Commission's holistic systemic investigation into gender transformation at institutions of higher learning, where we also engaged and we had the Vice Chancellor appearing before us twice, actually, to the Commission to come and account on some of the issues that were coming out. The Commission continues to monitor reported sexual offences at Rhodes University specifically, and is always provided with outcomes of some of the disciplinary sittings that are happening and some of the court appeals processes. We are closely monitoring those processes. Rhodes has reviewed its policies surrounding sexual offences, including the restructuring of harassment office. The manner in which they prosecute such cases when when disciplinary processes and sittings take place, and installations of some CCTV cameras, these are some of the things that we have seen, and specifically at Rhodes, and they have tried to have an increase in terms of education campaigns that they do. They have established a 24-hour counseling support system and firm dedication to struggle by the Vice Chancellor, the Office of the Vice Chancellor. We highlighted specifically Rhodes, I think, at this stage, because we really felt saddened as the Commission by the tragic loss of a student not so long ago in Kentani Maseko. And this really reaffirms the findings that there is a great disconnection between policy and implementation that needs to be done. The culture and threat of gross gender-based violence is present in every step of a woman's path through life, despite some of the initiatives that are put in place, and some of the things that we actually thought were coming out positive, specifically looking at Rhodes and some of the recommendations that we had done. And we are investigations, the actions taken by Rhodes to date after our report, including the possible inquest, obviously working with police in terms of that particular death. So in conclusion, Chair, I think it should be noted that the hearings of transformation within institutions of higher learning are still ongoing. As we indicated, we still have further four that we are supposed to engage with in this current financial year. And we continue to also make specific recommendations to universities to sensitize their communities on sexual harassment and other gender-based violence-related policies that should be put in place. And we will ensure that we monitor implementation of the recommendations that we have put for institutions that have already appeared before us. The scope of the investigation will be extended, obviously, in future to also look at TVET colleges due to, you know, financial constraints. It becomes difficult for us, and which is why year in, year out, we've been taking three or four institutions at a time to be able to deal with them. We must also indicate that as the Commission, we have been really worried even prior to, you know, starting with these transformation hearings about the processes in which universities hold or undertake in order to deal with gender-based violence. And to this, we just want to make an indication that even, I mean, as far back as to 2010, we had engaged with the Department of Higher Education at that point in time, trying to say, if you look, there isn't a uniform or a standardized process in terms of how universities deal with some of these issues. Everybody is doing whatever that they are doing, and the idea there was to have, you know, some sort of work that can be financed and funded by higher education in order to come up with some sort of framework that will actually ensure that we are standardized and we are able to deal with gender-based violence, and we hold institutions to account when it comes to gender-based violence in these institutions. We are aware, Chair, that in October, I think last year, there was a framework that was put in place. We're not too sure at this stage, because we were engaged as an interested party, as the Commission at the time, on the framework that the higher education was trying to put, that will kind of ensure that there are some processes that universities, or there's a standardized policy framework that is in place that will ensure that universities follow, especially when you look at some of the surge and high numbers of gender-based violence. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO. Anything from the Chair?
We called the VCs to come and account with their ex-cos, but we also went further, because the students were also asking the Gender Commission to come and do inspections, because the students were saying what the VCs are explaining to us is not the real. So we did go to KZN University, and there was discord between what the VC was saying and what the students are saying and what the academics are saying. And also, just on the part of the transformation, that means the promotion, recruitment of women lecturers going through the doctorate and professorate, that we found that there seems to be a glass ceiling. Women are not really getting equal opportunities to be professors or the doctorates, to be given much time for the much needed time for them to go and do and do their research and do the publications as required, so that they can be professors or proceed or progress. And it's things that we have raised with the universities, that they are training, the skills development of our women academics has to be prioritized, and there has to be a budget that is set aside for our women academics to actually be tracked and be taken through the processes, but also to be considered in equal amounts for the professorate as well, because we saw that it is male dominated. The other aspect that there were inconsistencies on Well, exactly where do they appear in terms of top management, senior management, and the base, where people are just ordinary lecturers? And we found a lot of our women academics were sitting at the base, and you will find that at the top there is still a male-dominated culture and leadership within our universities that still needs to be addressed. Just another interesting factor on the issue of GBV. The male students in our campuses, residential campuses, they have a sense of entitlement to our female students. If they have relationships with them, they expect them to do the domestic work. So the young women in our residences are looking after these young men, and the young men are expecting them actually to cook for them, clean for them. And one interesting part of a student who raped in one of the universities revealed that he was just sexually frustrated, and the university just dismissed him from the university, excluded him from the university without the consequences of this person being a rapist and being reported as a rapist. So one of the things that I think is a disjuncture between what the universities and how they work with local police in making sure that if there is an alleged perpetrator, a rapist, because a rape is an extreme form of violence against women, that universities should start thinking quite upfront about how to deal with rape in their campuses involving the police. But our students at Rhodes did raise an issue, and I think it's something that is prevalent in the universities, that the police don't really want to work or take the perpetrator to prison or something like that. They just listen and then they leave, as if it's just a social problem of young people who are in one space and therefore it will simply go away. The police need to come and work hand in hand with our universities. But I think that universities themselves, the vice chancellors, if I go back to the transformation thing, what we have prescribed to our VCs is that their key performance areas must have and be weighted on gender transformation, specifically women development, women promotion, the selection panels, making sure that our women who are finding themselves in that space are allocated training. There is gender sensitivity training. They are protected against sexual harassment, and they themselves are given time to go and visit other universities outside the country, just like their male counterparts, and their children, if they have small children, that the universities should kind of think strategically how to support our women academics to do what is necessary for them to progress. Thank you very much.
Again, thank you very much to the CGE for your presentation. As agreed, honorable members, I'm going to ask the department, can you introduce yourself and inform us who will do the presentation?
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Viyokazi Mafilika, representing the TVET branch in the department.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lindile.
Okay. Pardon me. My name is Lindile Shabalala, representing the transformation unit in the university branch.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm Fundisoso Tendwa, representing the University Education Branch.
Good afternoon, honorable members and chairperson. My name is Desi Mashabokwani. I'm representing the Social Inclusion and Equity Unit of the Department of Higher Education. We are responsible for monitoring social inclusion and transformation in general in all our institutions. So I'm going to start to respond, and I believe my colleagues will then add or help with the inputs. Let me first start by saying most of the hearings that the CGE conducted, we did attend them, and we acknowledge what is brought about by the report that they've just presented. And I want to say that we do have the policy framework for the realization of social inclusion in the PSET system, which was gazetted in December 2016, and it has been in operation since the beginning of last year.
My apology. Have you given us anything?
No, we were not aware that we are supposed to give input.
You were not aware?
No.
So how did you come here if you were not aware?
We were told to come and support the CGE.
But you are two different institutions. How do you one support the other one? Honourable members, I'm not quite sure if this is a good thing that we have to listen to some make-up story, or we are being informed there's a proper presentation. I have signed letters that invited you here. And the minister has informed you he's coming. So surely there has to be a report. You did not phone anyone to clarify what you must come and do here.
The document that was given to me, I'm not sure about my colleagues, but the one that was given to me did not indicate that we have to give inputs. We were just told that the CG is going to present on the hearings that they conducted. And since we had been part of some of the hearings, we should attend in support of the CGE.
Well, surely that was never communicated to yourself. This is what you need to do. Honorable Kekana.
No, Chair. My view is that because we always persist that any presentation must be in writing, especially from the department, I think we should rather ask the department that because Commission on Gender has made a presentation, we should rather raise issues and they can help the Commission to answer to issues. But to make a verbal presentation, according to our norm in this portfolio, and I know it applies to other portfolio, we usually don't accept that. But when the Commission responds, they can add if there are issues that they think are. So the support must come in that form rather than in a verbal presentation.
Can I find out if there's anyone that feels different to that? Not. So I think you would agree with us. Let's not have a report which is, as we walk, we talk, and we heard what they said, and then we also, that's certainly not going to help us. I would suggest to the department that two things. The one is certainly we should ask what is it that we're coming to do in the meeting. There can't be four of you here, and all four of you don't know what you're coming to do here. That certainly can't be the case at all, and it's totally unacceptable. And secondly, I think whoever is here from the department, let it be known that there are some reports that we haven't received for tomorrow and the next day. We haven't received it as we sit here. We will not have that same situation tomorrow or Thursday for that matter. So, honourable members, with that great disappointment of what we're having from the department, I'm going to hand over to yourself to engage on the report that the commissioner has given, and you are free to ask questions to the department. Okay, Kana. I've got the hands.
Chair, we thank the presentation from the commission agenda. This is because we are aware that this is a very, very enormous task that they are given, because what you are dealing with is actually overruling a whole national and international patriarchal society, which is not an easy thing, because it is there in the churches, it is there for those who read the Bible, it is just there in jobs, at school, everywhere. So this is not an easy thing, and we actually not surprised that it is not, you're not running with it and finding it to be easy, because this is a big overhaul of a society, and we know that old habits die hard, as they say. So the first thing is on the quota system. Do you have some kind of a quota system? Because where there is transformation, look at government, for example. It is because whenever politicians are going either to national parliament or to provincial parliament or local government, there's always some kind of quota that we expect so much percentage to be women. Because at the level of practicability, not policy, where you implement policy, if you don't have an instrument to enforce, it really doesn't happen. If it happens, it is very much at a slow pace. So is a quota for gender and disability applied, or do you need to put it in place? Secondly, the other university I think you mustn't pick is Stellenbosch, because at one stage, not long, I think 2016, we had cases where students actually said, this is outstanding, we've got rapes there, and they even gave, they said, as a measure, they were giving girls whistles, so that if you attend, you can blow a whistle. But we find that to be a bit not normal, I mean, to be carrying a whistle and blowing it at university. But is that kind of a measure which you would like you to check that at Stellenbosch? The third thing, on the issue of questions, are you interacting with other institutions that are doing something similar to yours, like women, gender desk in the president's office? It used to run on its own, gender and disability. It is now in the president's office. Monitoring and evaluation, how are they doing, also in the president's office? Labor, Department of Labor in monitoring compliance to employment equity. That is the first question. The second question, is it not advisable that at all this institution, we could say at medical center, they should also avail a psychology clinic, so that when these ladies, young ladies, are traumatized, they've got somebody who can, they can confide in, who can advise them immediately, because it is trauma, I can imagine, when these things happen. So if there could be at least at a level of psychological help, mental trauma, be somebody available to deal with this type of a thing. The last question, Have we compared, are we able to compare maybe when you do with labor, if you can compare how university's transformation is doing as compared to private sector with employment and the treatment of ladies, with government, generally all the department, because then you can give us a better report that says at universities we are behind everybody, or at least we are not doing better as compared to private sector or to government department. That's the last question. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and apologies to everyone for my voice when you're coughing. I've got a cold. Chairperson, the first one for me would be to concur with the notion of blind spot default. And I want to be very frank to ask the Commission, how do we become more proactive? Because many a times you find that we'll be praising ourselves for catching the rapist or those who are perpetrators. But I don't think we should be celebrating when that injustice was not supposed to happen in the first place. And so we need to then find more strategic avenues and how do we deal with the issues before they take place themselves. So even firstly for us as lawmakers, what can we do to try assist on the ground? Is it that the policies and laws that we are drafting are not effective, or perhaps they don't understand the issues respectively? So how do we as lawmakers ensure effectively that the laws and policies you pass are able to be implemented respectively within the departments themselves? And secondly, in terms of the institutions, Chairperson, I'm of the view, and you can correct me, that institutions are public entities. And so they are of the public and to be of service to the public. And the fact that in such a critical matter they have to be subpoenaed, I think is problematic. And maybe the department can answer what are the consequences when we have a broad framework, when we as a country are trying to redress and bring transformation, yet you find the public institution trying to hinder that process. So maybe we can see what can we do with institutions don't want to adhere to the laws and processes that we have, and also perhaps to the recommendations that have been made. Thirdly, we speak about equal opportunities, and I believe in that fundamentally, that we need to create more bursaries and more opportunities for women to occupy these spaces. And for me, what I've seen as a trend, Chairperson, is that would take a female, make her vice chancellor, but the rest of management is all male. And so how do we then inverse or rather rectify that problem? And you find that as much as she is the head, she's just a symbolic figure. The decisions are still made by predominantly patriarchal, society that does not understand what we're trying to achieve. Also, I just want to ask the Commission, I know there's institutions that you've given recommendations to, has there been a time frame placed for them to say, look, by this time, this is what we should have achieved? If you're speaking about saying we want to ensure we have CCTVs, we have these respective avenues, is there a time frame for that? Because, I mean, you'd watch recently, just in the Eastern Cape alone, Rhodes University, there was a rape incident. In Nelson Mandela University, there was a rape incident. At Forte, this past weekend, there was another incident. I mean, these are institutions that we've called to the party, yet these things are still transpiring in their institutions. So maybe there could be a time frame that we could propose for them. Lastly, Chair, I know we're not psychologists or whatever, but I do think there's some form of, whether it's a module, I don't know, that we can, you know, enforce to just dismantle the patriarchy and the ability in which we think. And the focus shouldn't solely be on women, and the men as well, the conductors, the perpetrators. How do we tap into their thinking and their avenue and transform it? There was a student leader, and, you know, I saw the video, who said if the security is too tight at race, it causes sexual frustration. And that student leader just sent out an apology, was in the Times Live, and nothing has been done. I mean, this is someone who served in the SRC, who young people look up to. And that's the kind of mentality that he has, that if you are too strict. By the way, we're putting those safety in place measures so that our young women are protected, so that even the young men who are coming, you know, from very difficult backgrounds, who are trying to change the circumstances of their birth, to have a better life. And if we let such things and rumors pass, well, not rumors, but your sentiments being echoed, it does cause a bit of a problem. So maybe the department can respond to that since they were not aware that they had to have a presentation.
Thanks, Chair. But I think the other speakers spoke mouthful. Chairperson, I just want to raise one or two questions or a comment. My first question is that sometimes the victims withdraw the cases. They report the case, and in the process of investigation, then they withdraw. What does the commission do about that? One other thing, Chairperson, is that like my colleague next to me indicated that I think we also need to involve or target the male students, because those are the people who are causing social disorders in the universities. So I think that is what I can say for now. And one other challenge I have observed, Chairperson, is the lack of enforcement, the enforcement strategies for the policies. I think it's a challenge as well, because we may have as good as we may want to have those policies, but if they remain to be good without implementation, I think they will be as good as they will be. Lastly, Chairperson, is just my comment to say, of course, in the midst of a multitude of challenges that we have, at least we have to start from somewhere. With this words, I just want to thank the Commission for what they have done. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Just from my side, on the first aspect that you have presented as the CGA, which is the transformation aspect, I would agree with you that what we need to have is a joint program together with the department. We appreciate the fact that you cannot make gender equity a lesser aspect of transformation, but both from the Human Rights Commission's report and your report, the caution that we will give is we must be careful that this issue will be further relegated from where it is now. And so we will support the fact that yourself and the department's unit must work together to make sure that this aspect becomes an extremely mainstream aspect in a range of different areas. Equity is not numbers only. Equity is a range of different things. So if the institution's entire culture is not in support of gender equity, I think it's those main things that we need to talk about. If the institution's budget does not speak to gender equality, you will get lots of reports and you'll monitor them all the time. You won't get anywhere. We must not underestimate the fact that now that we have women being in the majority at all the institutions as it relates to students, what does that mean? and what further support are being given. So we can give you a long list of things from the committee side. We think that you must go much further than what you have reported to us. And we think that just monitoring them, you know, they'll just give you something again. If they didn't want to come to you in the first place and you had to use a provision of the law, then it's an attitude towards what's happening at the institution also. And so we think that what we will do as a committee on the transformation part, we would want to make more proposals to you to say, arising out of our own oversight that we've done as a committee, these are the aspects we think that you need to address, because they must go as far as what are the various the different things that students study at the institution, gender relations and impact that has on it when students don't have the ability to deal with all the difficulties on the study side. What do you do? There should be no difficulty for you even to see whether these buildings has conformed itself now to all the different equity aspects that they ought to be. I'm not going to go through the entire list. We think that we must give you much more, because we think that this thing of just going to monitor is not going to get you anywhere. In this 24 years, how many monitorings have you done? And where has that taken to? Now, let me find out from the CGE. Do you think that you have enough power to enforce that which you recommend? Or do you come back and say, okay, we've recommended the last time, we're coming to see again if you have implemented what we have recommended? What steps are being taken that if you have said these are the defaults that you have picked up and this is the ability or possibilities that you can do? I'm saying all of this because I'm worried that you go and you look at the same things. Our interest is change. Our interest is not how many times you are monitoring. Then on the second part, I think we must all agree we have failed the female student in all the institutions, everywhere. We must just accept that we have failed young women and that we have not given sufficient care, sufficient security, and sufficient support to young women out there. In 2018, a young woman decides to take her life because there's nothing out there that can support her. Must bring shame to all of us that we can have a situation like that. Is this a new issue? No, it's not a new issue at the institutions. It is not the first time that gender-based violence are experienced at institutions. So what we think we should first of all ask both the department and the CGE, isn't it true that none of the institutions does not have policies? So if there's a policy that is floating around that Lisa Wetten has done, that doesn't mean there's a policy. There's absolutely nothing in place at any institution that directs any staff member, this is what he or she needs to do at the staff level. There's no policy that directs a vice chancellor, this is what they need to do or not do. There's no policy that directs students to students when you sign up to further education at this institution. By the way, this is also included. So I agree that when they get orientation, surely that needs to be part of it. It doesn't happen at all. So the understanding of the student is freedom now. It's going to be great for me for a couple of years at this institution with no ability of this is the responsibility that I have to take when I'm in this institution. So can the department tell me where are the policies and what enforcement are you putting in place to enforce to all the institutions that, one, we have a constitution that talks about the fact that we need to have a society where people must feel safe, which is what the constitution says. Two, that as part of the overall responsibility around a range of other things, these are one of it that they have to. When I picked up the phone and I asked Stellenbosch, what do you have? They told me the most horrid story about what they don't even have at the institution as it relates to gender-based violence. There's a little something that they have. We have a document here, a little something that they have that is there in the corner. You stay there. Don't make a nuisance of yourself. Let the rest. It can't be that we have. So that's the first one. Can we follow the law? And can we find out what the policy is? And can we find out by when will such a policy, and by when will the department instruct all of them that you want a policy within a month's time? How many more deaths and how many more unsafe situations would they do you want? Number two, CGE, do you have any data on the prevalence currently at all these institutions? When I say the prevalence, I include the colleges. I really applaud the fact that you are moving to the colleges, and may I urge you to do so with speed, because the stories are far more horrified there also. I also want to say that the Committee on Police is having an amendment to the Domestic Violence Act. I want to ask you to make input into that so that higher education is much more represented in the changes that they would want to bring about. CGE, your relationship with the justice system, does it stretch as far as that in saying that, you know, there are assistance or justice are being given to young people, or they are being failed by the justice system, so that this committee can interact with the justice system or the committees in Parliament on whether they are assisting or not. What I certainly have not heard is CGE, you telling us about the contributing factors. So let me give you an example. You would know in any township where there are no lights, where there are lots of bushes, where there are a range of those kind of things, crime will be very high in those areas. So let's take Walter Sisulu as an example. We went there at the beginning of the year, and we found accommodation that students live in. That is, first of all, lots of other people that stay there that don't belong there. Secondly, they are selling strange things in their rooms, which are not food. Thirdly, the exit and entry into the university, anyone can just walk there, and anything can happen at any time. So I don't hear you saying that you go as far as that. Talk about the contributing factors. And then also, why is Walter Sisulu not on the list? Can you put them on the list? I looked at the list again. I thought maybe I didn't see properly. Why is Walter Sisulu not on that list at all? Why is Unizulu not on that list? And so on. We want to encourage you that you really got to get to all 26 universities. Stellenbosch came here and they told us the stories that Honorable Kekana told us. You heard what happened at UCT. And so I can continue. I think we're making a big mistake if you want to stick with 14 institutions as opposed to going to the, I think, 26 of them. So I think there's a number of things that we're asking you to do, but also to answer to us here today. And we think you must agree with us. We are failing young people out there. there are absolutely more and more reasons, a situation where all of these things will increase as opposed to decreasing because of the kind of situation. And why don't we have a situation that we cannot hold any of these institutions to account to say that this has got to be part of their policies that they need to have? I pick up the phone and I talk to Wits. An incident has happened there. The Vice Chancellor decided to institute a quick response. It's good. It has happened. But that doesn't speak to the fact that there's a policy. And then I'm very happy that you're raising this thing that during the 2016 fees must fall period, what happened? I think that's the second time that we all just looked at the fact that women were pushed to the periphery. And all these horrible stories that happened during the 2015 and 2016 students uprise and what happened to women. And you don't talk about it. And you don't say what has happened to the women and how men use their power over the females, all in the name of getting fee-free education. So I think there's a lot that that we don't hear you talking about. There's a lot that we don't see that are being done. And we certainly would want to call you back again. But on the following basis, we will call you back on a range of different things that we have put to you. The department, we've given you questions also, and we'll start with you to answer, and then we'll go to the commission.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with a question that refers to consequences. As far as we know, there are no consequences to non-complying. Institutions are given a policy framework to work on to develop their own policies within the institutions. But if they do not comply, say for example in terms of reporting and all that, all we do is indicate in the annual report that these are the institutions that have reported and others have not reported. But there are no harsh consequences to those institutions. And also the question on the empowerment programs for men and for women to change mindsets in the institutions. The Department of Higher Education and Training does not have programs on its own, but the institutions, individual institutions do have their own programs. Of course, it's not all. And we are not sure how effective they are, because the honest truth is when institutions report, most of the time they report what will make them look good. And if there are challenges within the system, most of the time those challenges are not reported. I'll give an example. If you ask institutions, for example, to give you statistics of cases of sexual harassment that have been reported in the institution, most do not respond. Why? Because they think that those reports will make them look bad as an institution. We have requested policies, coming to the question of policies, we have requested policies on a number of occasions, especially gender policies from universities. Most of them responded by saying they do not have a gender policy, and those that said we have a gender policy said it's in the process of review, so we cannot give it to you. When you say, okay, give us what you have while you are busy reviewing the policy, you do not get it. So it's a challenge that we have. The other challenge, I think, which is worth reporting or noting, is the fact that institutions of higher learning, especially universities, are required to report to the department once a year. And as you would know, with transformation, I personally regard it as a human being. As a human being, you wake up, you plan that tomorrow this is what I'm going to do, next week this is what I'm going to do. And if something happens today to disturb the plans, you cannot put it on hold and say, I have a plan. You have to attend to it because it may prevent you from executing your plan. So if we do not get reports regularly, the challenge then becomes that we cannot spot challenges immediately after they have happened, so that we are able to advise and say this is what the institutions are supposed to do. So getting a report at the end of the year that says so many rapes occurred or sexual harassment cases were reported at the end of the year is not helpful, as opposed to regular reporting, maybe on a quarterly basis, that would then say there's a problem at that institution. What kind of interventions can we have? And then also the another challenge perhaps that is worth raising, which we have observed from the Social Inclusion and Equity Unit, is the fact that transformation managers in universities especially do not occupy positions of influence or power, such that whatever it is that they do at the end of the day, it is not supported or it doesn't carry water. So they do not sit in high management meetings where they can influence decisions in the institutions. And I think this is one other aspect that needs to be looked at, as to what positions do they hold and what kind of influence do they have within the institutions. I'm not sure if I answered everything, Chairperson. My colleagues will help me.
The part that you did not answer is that the Higher Education Act talks about an institutional forum. So when you say that they don't have power, there are structures in place in the institutions that are supposed to be dealing with that. Go and visit the Higher Education Act, and you will see the main vehicle that drives transformation is the institutional forum, before it even gets to the Senate and before it gets to the other bodies. So I don't understand when you talk about what is the role of the institutional forum. We have pointed this out to the department when we had the HRC before us, and we still see that that important forum, you are not picking up on what are being done at the institutional forum. Everyone sits on that forum. All the chair sits there, the vice chancellor sits there, everyone sits on that forum. How is it possible that transformation cannot be effected when the law says there will be an institutional forum? But your other colleagues might want to answer that.
Thank you, Chair. There has been a challenge at the institution with regards to institutional forums. The department picked that up and then is now in a process of revising the forum so that it can be equipped with all the powers that it has. We since had a meeting with all the chairpersons of the institutional forums last month, with the aim to revive the forum chair. Thank you.
Sorry, can you clarify what revive the forum? How can it be revived when it's a legislative aspect?
There has been a challenge with its activeness in the institution, in that in some institutions they were not given the platform to do what they're supposed to do in terms of the act. And then we picked that up, and then we constituted the forum of the chair of the forum in order to work with them and work out a program to equip them more and assist them to be active at the institution.
Anyone else from the department? No?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Pinky Sobahle. Sorry I came in late. I'm from another meeting here in Parliament.
You want to confer with them first?
No.
You may proceed.
Thank you very much. I'll attempt to answer a few of the questions that have been asked. There was a question on the quota system, the quota. Do we look at quotas? When we do the transformation hearings, yes, we look at the numbers. Some may think it is not that important, but we feel we start with the numbers first. And then we will move on. What we found was, you will find that there are a number of women in lower positions. The higher positions, there will be few, but in lower positions, you get them. Then the question then we will ask would be, how do you promote women to get to those senior positions? A number of these institutions have, they call them the gender academic development programs that ensure that the women get achieve the qualifications that are needed, and thus promoting them, getting up the ranks. Then the other question was a good practice by the University of Stellenbosch. The chair mentioned the contributing factors to what is happening in the institution. What we found in the hearings was, because of the contributing factors, now quoting, if I can quote Stellenbosch as given having whistles, you quote Rhodes University that will have where they can ring 24-hour if they are on campus. They will simply press a bell if they find that they are in trouble. So there are those good practices where these institutions take into consideration the environment and therefore improve the environment in that way. Perhaps what is lacking is these institutions sharing good practices. There are good practices in some of them. Maybe what is lacking is them sharing these good practices, coming together to share them. So the question on monitoring, for how long will CGE be just monitoring and doing what afterwards? In some cases, you find that some institutions don't even have some of these policies, but after the hearings, we have a call it a mediation approach where we hold their hands and move with them. Where there are no policies, the institutions will be assisted into having these policies. And then after some time, talking about the monitoring that the chair mentioned, they will be called back for us to check how far they have gone with the advice that we're given. But yes, Chair, I agree, monitoring and then what? So this year, the new strategic plan, we have introduced action. We're saying, yes, we have been monitoring. Now we have to act. I'll give you an example. You'll come to this institution and find that some of the learners have been let down by the police at the police station, then what do we do? So those are the things that we'll follow. We will follow up what happened at the police station. We have done that at Rhodes. When there was their reference group, we went to the police station and the police agreed to work with us. So we are now saying we have been monitoring, not doing anything. We are going to go where the failure happened. If they were failed by the police, we want to know why is it that they were failed by the police. I'll stop here for now.
thank you very much, Chair and members. I must say, from where I'm sitting, and specifically, I think it's going to be in the interest at some point of Parliament as a whole to actually ensure that as a country we have a specific legislation put in place that takes into account issues of quota. We are signatory to the SADC protocol, which actually had envisaged that as a country across all spheres we would have reached 50-50 in 2015. But that has not happened. I mean, we do transformation across all spheres, whether it's political sphere and everywhere else. it's not happening, and I think that it may just be important that probably we as a country think about coming up with a specific legislation that will ensure that we enforce issues related to 50-50. I take your point, ma'am, around, I think it was Honorable Kekana that also mentioned that perhaps one of the things that we should be looking into is for some of the medical institutions to actually open up their own psychology clinics so that they assist. We have seen, I think we have in the report, there are some institutions where we see them having provided this psychology clinics, but I mean psychology services, but it may just be important. It's something that maybe we can actually look into to see how much more substantive it can be done to ensure that all the universities utilize that lack of medical sphere to assist in some of these cases. There was a question around whether we have compared university transformation with a private sector in order to just give a sense in terms of how far we are. We haven't really done that, and I think it's a good point, because normally what we do when we zoom into a particular area, we just zoom public sector and private sector. At that time, we could actually see the variances that public sector was doing much better than private sector at the time. And I think it's something that perhaps we should also look into these institutions and say, now looking into what we have found in private sector, public sector, how can institutions actually improve and have the actual hard numbers in terms of that kind of cross-pollination. We do also interact with like-minded institutions. I mean, when you look at our budget, we always find collaborative efforts actually important for the work. And so when we look into issues around transformation, we do have engagements with employment equity commissions specifically. We were asked about labor. We work very closely with Employment Equity Commission on some of the processes that we undertake. We do work with Women's Ministry. I mean, Women's Ministry more recently, actually, we've been working with them on many of their programs that are looking at gender-based violence. But I think at a point that we were doing, you know, or going through this particular process, most of the stakeholders that we were engaging on was DHET itself. We had higher education network that we were also trying to engage with on some of the work that we were undertaking at the time. In terms of how long, you know, how has been a time frame for recommendations. We do try and give institutions around 6 months. So what we do is this financial year we will engage an institution, and then we will have a report. We'll give them 6 months. In the next financial year, as much as we have selected a new one that we are engaging with, we also make time after that 6 months to go back to the others that we would have already put reports out to see how far they are doing and how they are faring. It does seem, in many instances, that you know, there are things that they try to put in place, but I think it still goes to what the chair was saying in terms of ensuring that DHET would still need to ensure that there is that particular coordination, because we see this fragmentation, and it's actually not assisting In terms of moving forward on some of the things.
I think, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think there's also the issue of the autonomy of universities. So with us, for us to enter with in the universities, we use the subpoena. So as you hear, higher education is saying they will refuse with documentation. So for us, with subpoena, we tell them exactly what we are looking for inside their universities in terms of the documentation. So we will build on what we have started, Chair, as you are recommending to us, because what we wanted to do now, we were sampling what is happening with the university. So we sampled the 13 and we asked them the questions, and where they are not able to give us information, we put them under subpoena and write exactly what we are looking for. And I just wanted to give an example that our powers allow us to mediate. So when we get into a university, we have our findings and we give them 6 months. We're coming back to your university to find an improvement. Within a year, we will come and find an improvement. I just want to talk about the Stellenbosch University. Just on the numbers themselves, I think, Honorable Member, you were asking about the quota system. We use, as our primary source, the employment equity report. What we have found with universities, they put the employment equity report and the requirements aside, and they go on and do their own recruitment selection, and most of their recruitment and selection is male-dominated. Stellenbosch is 73% male. UJ as well, I think UJ is better as that. We have the numbers here in our report. We'll leave it here. And one of the aspects that has been raised by our female academics at Stellenbosch was actually the fact that there is a pay gap. Females and males, males are paid higher than females, and there is a whole secrecy around who earns what, how much, and why that wage differentiation for equal work. And that is what was raised. The students of Stellenbosch also are raising the fact that besides that they have the whistles, they would want to have a public health facility on campus. And these are the things that we then work with the universities when we come back to them. I just wanted to give an example of University of Free State. Here you would find that that the university itself, they are talking about the racial and gender composition of the Senate. And I think that they are putting it as a stumbling block that the Senate itself needs to be reviewed urgently because it's one of the biggest hindrances to transformation at the U.S. And this is our report 2017-2018. And I just wanted to give the exact recommendations that we have been looking at and what we are raising with them. For example, I just want to give the last example, Chair, just on the quota, and what we are looking at there is that the Employment Equity Act is very clear on the designated groups, but universities don't follow the designated grouping recruitment. What they explain on, then there is some underlying preference for foreign nationals. And when we have asked, it's fine, they call it internationalization, the outlook and all that, but what we are asking them is what is the balance, what is the policy of the university in terms of whether you would substitute employing Africans, black in particular, females broadly, vis-a-vis employing foreign nationals. So what is your percentage? Because you are not complying on this one, on designated groupings, but you are growing on this side. And those are the difficult questions that our vice chancellors have to answer to. But I think that the council itself, because it oversees the transformation, the councils have also have to play that role in making sure that the quota system that the framework that the employment equity has put is being implemented in the university. So there is a lack of the employment equity enforcement there. The chair, you also asked about the monitoring at presidency. I think one question. The country generally lacks gender disaggregated data and budgeting. I'll give you an example where at Rhodes University, their response to academic support and gender and transformation work, they will say, for example, it will cost them this much to do this, and therefore their budget, it doesn't allow them to actually carry through their transformation agenda. One of our worst people that showed up in the Gender Commission through a subpoena was University of Venda. One ex-co member there was a female, and we said to them, you are not leaving until you have given us a gender transformation plan as Univen. And I think that one of the aspects in Univen was the sexual harassment of our female academics and the non-protection, I think, generally with universities, because I see it even at University of Free State and Stellenbosch. Our LGBTI community, our students that are LGBTI, they feel that the universities are not really protecting them and they are not making any provisions for them inside campuses. They feel excluded in terms of culture and the residences. So I think that Univen for us is something that we are working with. It's a concern. The withdrawal of cases. I think one of the things that we have, the NPA is actually now looking very seriously on withdrawal of cases. The National Prosecuting Authority, these people are working very hard. I think that is one of the good stories to tell about sexual offenses, that NPA, if you withdraw a case, NPA has to make the final decision on the withdrawal or not. And that is what they have improved on. So a victim goes to report and wakes up tomorrow and say, no, because of family pressure or the academic, the university says, no, we'll take care of this and all that. We have expelled this person who was raping, so things are normal, come, and then the person then is pressured to withdraw the cases. I think that NPA is refusing to withdraw a case without checking the veracity and making sure that it is addressed. The other area that we recommended under University of Free State, and I think that is applicable to our VCs, I know that they have a council for university leadership. I think one of the areas that they have to consider, I know that in some universities that we monitored, Tshwane University came to the Gender Commission, we did propose that the vice chancellors must have a key performance on transformation. Not just transformation, because we all know race is the most leading part, and gender as well, because the equality clause in the Constitution is very clear. It's race, it's gender, it's sex, and etc. So I know that the TUT has adopted that, and UJ has improved on their response, as you have said, Chair. Also, we have worked with the vets on improving the response on sexual harassment and sexual assault in the campus. The Justice and Police and the Magistrates Commission, Chair, we are working with the, I'll give you an experience of the Magistrates Commission and the Chief Justice. What we have done is the Gender Commission, we have actually approached the two, but I just want to sensitize the House that the law is that the magistrate in that room is the authority. So we are allowed as a Gender Commission to support victims. We are allowed to engage with the magistrate and ask the questions, why this person 7 years has been here,
not been given bail, what's happening here. And I know that we have been asked not to influence as a gender commission the judiciary, because the judiciary has its powers. But what we have appealed to the Magistrates Commission and the Deputy Chief Justice was a moral suasion on, one, because patriarchy is a societal issue, our magistrates, our judges will not be isolated from being impacted on by patriarchy. And that what we have raised with them was that we are asking for them to look at different, to morally persuade what is happening inside our courts. Because what we have found is that, for example, we have a Briggs case at the moment, a 13-year-old was raped, and you find the defense lawyer saying the 13-year-old was not a virgin. And according to law, that is secondary. That is secondary discrimination. But what we have found is that it is something that is allowed in defense. Inside our courts, they even ask, what were you wearing? And for us, what we are saying is that if you are asking, what were you wearing, and it is allowed in the precinct, then it constitutes discrimination. Because the question of saying, what were you wearing, it simply says that you are at fault because you were wearing this, and it inculcates further unconscious hatred towards women by the society. And that is the issues that we have been raising with the Deputy Chief Justice and the Magistrates Commission, that we also have to look at the training of the legal fraternity for them to respond to issues of gender transformation. Therefore, there has been some there has been a strong support from Justice and the Magistrates Commission on issues that we have picked up, what is happening in the Magistrates Commission. The police. Chairperson, the police in the populous areas and their connection to the higher education precinct is something that needs to be looked at. I know that in other universities there are initiatives to address the shebeens around schools, the closure of shebeens around where the university is and what is happening in the community. But we would like maybe higher education to make sure that there is an established relationship of security around our universities. Tie it with what is happening with the metropole protection or the police stations around them, because it's something that needs to be improved. But we know that where a university is right in the middle of a populous area like in Soshanguve, you need to strengthen the functioning of the police station there to respond and assist the universities around them. So it's something that we appreciate the Domestic Violence Act. We will make our contributions. Just lastly, Chair, I think that the Fees Must Fall also brings in an influx of our, in terms of class now, vulnerable young women into the universities. And therefore, that is why for us as a gender commission, we don't only investigate the universities. We work on them to improve what is happening inside their precincts with the vice chancellors. Because we want more. If our young women get into these universities, vulnerable as they are from SASA background or orphaned, and they get into the universities, they become a vulnerable cohort that the universities must be responsible and take a charge of in terms of protection, their protection. So we appreciate that initiative of working with the police, but also just on higher education here where we are, that we should be looking at our vulnerable students that are for the first time getting into universities. It's one of the contributory factors for them to drop out because of what they experience inside the precinct itself. I think I will stop there for now, Chair.
Okay. Well, I think, honourable members, we have said We've said a range of different things to you, and I want to reiterate a few things that we would want both the department and yourselves to do moving forward. I said earlier on that this is not the last that the committee will deal with this aspect, both the transformation issue as well as the gender-based violence issue. You have all agreed that we have failed young women at the various institutions, and that as we leave this meeting, we cannot say that there would be sufficient protection being given to women arising out of this meeting, which must be extremely sad for all of us. I think the one member spoke about the males and the orientation, I think, that you spoke about on Bobuto. I don't think they answered it, but they can take an opportunity to answer the question. I don't think they have answered it. If they can't answer it, I think we need to put that on the list of things that needs to be done. I note you, Honorable Kikana. Then we agree with you that you need to... This committee will confer with the other committees. We thank you for the aspects that you have said on the police, not always helpful. We will certainly convey that to the police committee, which have also been very keen about this committee. We will confer with the committee on women and any other relevant committee that we think would be important to talk to about this aspect. We will also ask that the department will have to engage the institutions and come back to the committee and tell us what emergency plan are they putting in place to stop what is happening at the institutions at the moment. We will write to all the institutions, both colleges and universities, and ask them to inform us about the non-existence of a policy framework that is not there at the institution. That doesn't mean the department does not have a role and a function to ensure that can actually happen. I'm saying again, you can't have that policy document floating in the air and it's not landing somewhere. You must have paid a lot of money to Lisa Vetten and so on and others. And that's all that has happened to it. So certainly that has to be done. So we want an emergency plan. We will write to them, but you too, it's your duty to engage with them on having a proper policy in place. We would want the department to inform us what plan are being put in place with regards to the fact that the University of Nelson Mandela is currently, as we speak, on strike because of gender-based violence, and what are being done to engage with the institution around that aspect. I note what you are saying on the judiciary and in particular on the Magistrates Commission. I serve on the Magistrates Commission, so I'm very keen to hear what the aspects are, but I can tell you also that if a magistrate or a judge has made a ruling, you have to follow the law. You can't write to the Magistrates Commission because we look at the letter and we'll say that they must follow the law and help the those that appeared in court that did not get justice. You have to help them to take them through asking. And in this instance, the overall person that looks after both the courts and the magistrates are the Chief Justice. So you have to engage with the Chief Justice as opposed to the Magistrate Commission only. To the department, we think that, or at least to the CGE, We think that at the universities and colleges you have to engage with the institutional forum. That's the forum that deals with all the aspects that you are talking about, which the department is saying that they have picked up, that it's very weak. Of course, we can confirm that because that's what our oversight, on our oversight, we see. It's very weak. It hardly functions, and they never have answers on what transformation is there. And then, as I give you, Honorable Kekana, the opportunity to have the last word, unless there are other members, that we must say that what has happened at UCT and at Rhodes can't make us feel that things must be the same. In both instances, you had death, and those deaths were caused by particular things at the institutions. And surely we can't make as if it hasn't happened, surely we can't make as if we're not saying there's an emergency plan that needs to be put in place and that these are the steps that has to be taken. So we would encourage you that those two examples and many more that are not being spoken about in television or radio, there are very far many more instances that are not being reported on, should encourage us that much more needs to be done. Honorable Kekana, honorable members, was there anything else that you wanted to come back to? Because I hope I've summarized something, maybe some more suggestions that you would like to make also. Suggestions, Honorable Kekana?
Yeah, Chair, this is on the South African Engineering Council, the CEO. You know, for the first time I heard the media come strong on him, for the first time on such positive attack. And he said, as some of you might have heard it, that he doesn't think women are suited for engineering because they are better suited for caring services and health services because they are compassionate. But in a sense, it gave a tone of discrimination. Because, I mean, we've come across women in our classes who are just very good in sciences, in math and science. And civil engineering, one woman even said, well, I completed my civil engineering degree qualification. I couldn't be employed. This is the attitude that we are not suited for engineering. Engineering is for men. And she said, when I got employed after 2 years, I didn't mind to wear my jeans and T-shirt and go onto the field and check what is happening. So adjusting this CEO cannot be left, because it's either you open doors for lady engineers, or if he closes it, I mean, these very talented ladies are not going to get the opportunity. So just to make sure that the engineering council open doors, this CEO, I think you should also make him his put him in your list so that you can take him to task about it. We say we need scarce skills, and if women are talented, let them be absorbed into those scarce skills. Nobody should decide to discriminate against them because they are women. In his own mentality, think women must only be doctors or nurses. That's a stereotype. That's bad. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I must echo the sentiments of the previous speaker. So I've been captured that department, but I just want to appreciate the work that the Commission is doing, particularly with the new development now that they've engaged the Magistrate and Justice Commission. I mean, I remember in my second year doing law, and I had to shadow an advocate, and I remember being in court in a rape case, and such things, you know, were said, and it shook me to the core. And wanted to say, you know what, never again should we have such incidences. So the fact that you've identified that department and you know how vulnerable someone is at that point, and for us to be able to try rectify the system, not simply legally, but also the judiciary itself and how we execute our policies. I just want to appreciate and commend them. And I know you also assist exceptionally within that department.
I'm sure that all of you, apologies at the back, it was for members, but you are absolutely welcome to send your suggestions to us. In fact, anyone in this room is happy to send any suggestions to the committee. You would agree with me, honorable members, that we are very happy that we could meet today, that we've had the CGE before us. We trust that the department sees the importance of why we have called everyone, and that we will see a far better improvement. We will assist you, we will support you, but we think that we have raised right at the beginning of the year that your budget is way too small, and that will not take you very far. So, honorable members, you would agree that this is not the last on this matter. We would want, there are some of the issues that we would want you to come back to us in 2 weeks' time. Whether it's NMU, we will certainly immediately write to the institutions, and a range of other things we would want you to come back to us as soon as possible. We will write to all of you to remind you about the decisions that we have taken here. But thank you very much for your attendance, honorable members, and thank you very much to the CGE, the department, and everyone else in this meeting. Thank you. The meeting is closed.
Yeah.